Welcome to Coffee Table Mythos. I'm Eliza.
And I'm Leah.
For our new listeners, where can they find us?
Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, coffeetablemythos@gmail.com, anchor.fm, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. How can they support us?
By liking, following, sharing, subscribing, and reviewing our podcast. Reviewing our podcast helps others find us so that our family can grow. Come interact with us.
You can use our hashtag CoffeeTableMythos to show us your cool art of the entities we cover. Email us to let us know what you want to hear about, or message us on Instagram or Facebook. What about merch?
For now, visit us on Teespring at teespring.com/store/coffee-table-mythos for shirts, hoodies, stickers, and more. Leah is testing out prototypes so that we can make our own merch soon. You can also donate to us at anchor.fm/coffee-table-mythos/support. All donations will go to making this podcast better.
And with that,
grab your favorite beverage and let's talk myths.
What are we drinking today?
Coffee.
Of unknown flavor.
It's just the regular Folgers mixed with
some version of caramel coffee.
So, yeah, I think this might actually be the Kahlua caramel coconut crunch.
Good coffee.
Yeah.
I'm really leaning into Fox aesthetics, so I'm currently using my Fox mug.
And I'm using my New York Manhattan mug.
In teal.
In teal.
So what are you talking about today?
So originally, I was going to be talking about an Inuit deity named Nanuk. However, I don't feel like I've found enough information on it yet, and I want to make sure I do that right. So, last minute, I went ahead and got everything situated for Quetzalcoatl, which is an Aztec, Mayan, Mesoamerican deity that's been used by various cultures in that area of the world. So let's do it. Quetzalcoatl means precious serpent, or Quetzal feathered serpent. If you Google Quetzal, those birds are fucking gorgeous. So Quetzalcoatl is a deity in Aztec culture from the Nahuatl language. According to a 17th century descendant of Aztec royalty and historian, allegorically the name of Quetzalcoatl can mean wisest of men.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. Quetzalcoatl was related to the gods of the wind. He was represented by Venus, the planet, the dawn. He was the god of merchants and of arts, crafts, and knowledge. Also, he's the patron god of Aztec priesthood, of learning and knowledge. And he was the ally to the god of rain and twin to the psychopomp Zolotl, the dog-headed soul guide for the dead. Quetzalcoatl wears a wind breastplate around his neck, which is a spirally voluted wind jewel made of conch shell and emerald.
That's interesting.
Yes. The talisman was likely made and worn by religious rulers, and at least one major cache of offerings with knives and idols adorned with symbols of multiple gods had some with these wind jewels on them.
So they know they were for him.
Yes. Animals thought to represent Quetzalcoatl are the quetzals.
They are the prettiest birds!
Yes, they're very pretty, very pretty. Rattlesnakes, crows, and macaws. As Hecatl, which is another form of him, he is the wind, represented by spider monkeys, ducks, and wind itself.
Bottom monkeys.
Yes. As the morning star, he is also depicted as a harpy eagle. Earliest known documentation of worship of him is from the 1st century BC or AD, because they weren't really sure even on Wiki. He spread through Mesoamerica from 600 to 900 AD, and from 900 to 1519 AD, the worship was primarily in Mexican religious center of Cholula. Earliest iconographic depiction was in Stela 19 at Oleme, site of La Venta, in 900 BC, depicting a serpent rising behind a person engaging in a possible shaman ritual. Attributes and significance vary between civilizations and through history. Many versions of Quetzalcoatl's birth, in one, he was born to a virgin named Chimalman, who was visited by the god Ontkal in a dream. In another version, Chimalman conceived Quetzalcoatl by swallowing an emerald. And then in a third version, Chimalman was shot by an arrow in the womb by Mixcoatl, the god of the hunt, and 9 months later she gave birth.
Oh my gosh.
In all variations, she was a virgin. Another version has Quetzalcoatl, one of 4 sons of Ometecutli and Omecuhuatl. Each son presided over one of the 4 cardinal directions. Quetzalcoatl presided over the west, god of light, justice, mercy, and wind. He was often god of the morning star, while his twin brother Zolotl was the evening star. He was known as the inventor of books, the calendar, and giver of maize corn to man. And the way he did so was disguised as a black ant stealing the grain from red ants. And sometimes he is a symbol of death and resurrection. Some legends have him opposing human sacrifice, while others describe him practicing it. Most Mesoamerican beliefs included cycles of suns. Our current time referred often to the fifth sun, the previous four being destroyed by fire, flood, etc. Quetzalcoatl went to Mictlan, which is the underworld, and created the fifth world, mankind, from bones of the previous races, which, while going with his twin from the underworld to here, he took pieces of dropped bones, had the earth goddess ground them the bones into flour, and Quetzalcoatl moistened the flour with his blood, and with Zolotl, they shaped the mix into human forms and taught them how to reproduce themselves. Which, I mean, I read that and I was like, well, I wonder how that went. So the blood was actually from a wound he gave himself on the earlobes, calves, tongue, and penis.
Fun.
Yes. Imbuing the bones with new life. In the Codex Chimalpopoca, Quetzalcoatl was coerced by Tezcatlipoca to become drunk on pulque, which is an alcohol made from fermented sap of agave plant. It looks milky in color, but it tastes like a yeast, I guess.
Okay.
And cavorting, quotation marks, some academics imply this was incest, with his older sister, Quetzalpetlatl, a celibate priestess, and neglected their religious duties. And the next morning, Quetzalcoatl felt shame and regret and had his servants build a stone chest for him, adorned him in turquoise, and then he lied in the chest and set himself on fire.
Oh!
Yes. His ashes rose to the sky, followed by his heart, and became the morning star.
That just gave me chills.
There is a broad belief that Hernan Cortez, landing in South America in 1519, was believed to be Quetzalcoatl's return by Aztec Emperor Moctezuma II.
Fuck that guy.
However...
Specifically Cortez, not necessarily the king.
Well, I'm about to get into that. However, ethnic historians argue that this connection is not found in any document independently created from post-conquest Spanish influence, and there is little proof of pre-Hispanic belief of Quetzalcoatl's return. Most documents of this theory are entirely Spanish origin.
So they were like, yeah, they welcomed us. Yeah, we didn't just kill people indiscriminately.
Specifically, Cortez's letters to Charles V of Spain.
What a jerk.
So it's heavily implied that Cortez was, like, pushing that on them. I actually read an excerpt of the supposed speech that was documented, like, 50 years after the fact of how the Aztec emperor greeted the Spaniards. And some people would imply that that meant, oh, they thought he was a god. Other people think that it was actually they were being, you know, when you're being polite, but you don't mean to be polite. He was being like, oh yeah, totally come over to my empire and try to take over it. Like, he was being nice,
sarcastic.
But complete sarcasm. Like, it was politeness, but when I read that, I was like, oh my sweet lord, that makes sense. So, as a human form found on mythencyclopedia.com, he took a form as a warrior wearing a tall, cone-shaped crown or cap made of ocelot skin and a jade conch shell pendant. Buildings dedicated to this god were circular or cylindrical in shape to minimize resistance to wind.
Oh, that's really cool.
Carlos Fuentes, one of Mexico's lead writers, compares Quetzalcoatl to Prometheus, Odysseus, and Moses, all three having to leave their cultures but obtain gifts and wisdom that renewed these cultures. For example, one myth found that Quetzalcoatl's departure from his people was because his enemy, Tezcatlipoca, who wanted people to make bloodier sacrifices than the flowers, jade, and butterflies that they were offering Quetzalcoatl, tricked Quetzalcoatl by getting him drunk and holding up a mirror showing Tezcatlipoca's cruel face, making Quetzalcoatl believe he was looking at himself. Quetzalcoatl reacted by deciding to leave the world by throwing himself onto a funeral pyre, just setting himself on fire once more. Another version has Quetzalcoatl sail east into sea on a raft of serpents, and many Aztecs believed he would come back to his people one day.
Okay.
Mesoamerican priests and kings would sometimes take a name of a deity they associated with, so Quetzalcoatl is also a name of historic persons from that culture.
Okay, kind of like how Catholics take on a saint's name.
Exactly.
Okay.
In today's media, you will find in 1982 there's a film called Q, which is basically a depiction of a Quetzalcoatl monster that terrorizes New York City. I did not know this was a thing until I was researching it.
Like, why New York, of all places?
I know. I'm like thinking to myself, this has got to be like a 1980s B film.
I mean, like, movie. If I were a deity of a place that was like screwed over by a particular set of colonizers, I would be going there. I'd be like, hello, Spain.
He's also featured in Yu-Gi-Oh! Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid.
Yes!
Megami Tensei video game franchise, Fate Grand Order video game, Final Fantasy, Sanitarium, Smite, Indiana Jones and the Infernal Machine, Star Trek the Animated Series, The Secrets of the Immortal Nicholas Flamel books, and more. Also, on Mexico's flagship airline Aeromexico, they have a Boeing 787-9 Dreamliner painted in special Quetzalcoatl colors. And it is gorgeous. And they made specific note that Quetzalcoatl in, like, for example, Miss Kobayashi's, Quetzalcoatl's a she instead of a he in that show. And, like, what's interesting is in some of the stuff I was looking at, Quetzalcoatl's most of the time male, but sometimes they're like, it's possible Quetzalcoatl's female, but we don't know.
That's fair.
Yeah. And some people believe that the depiction of Quetzalcoatl as being this being of light actually stems from a ruler that held that name as a last name, which, like, he was like a priest ruler, and because he was so good, they, like, kind of attributed some of his characteristics to the god.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. There was, like, some more on that specific historical figure, but I was not going into the whole fall of the Aztec Empire and all that. Like, I do not need to get into that whole political shenanigans. I am here to study the god, so...
Folklore and myths.
Yeah. Because, like, there was, like, this whole thing where the cult of Quetzalcoatl was kind of part of the whole issue with the Aztecs and the Spaniards when the Spaniards came over. Each culture, like the Mayans, the Aztecs, and the different peoples in South America, when they would adopt Quetzalcoatl, they used Quetzalcoatl in different aspects, if that makes any sense. And then I also read on the wiki page, which I'm like a little bit sus about, is that in Latter-day Saints believe Quetzalcoatl was possibly like a second coming of Jesus Christ. The whole thing with the Mormonism deal, I was just like, what? I was very confused.
Yeah, that would be a whole other episode.
That would be its own episode. And I'm honestly like, I was never raised on the Mormon faith. I don't know too much about it. I know what the South Park episode went over with it, which is like, I'm not trying to offend anybody that does fall into that faith at all. It's just, it was mentioned.
I'm sure it was.
It was. I did have some friends that were in that religion while growing up, but it was very different as an outsider looking in. So.
We covered Quetzalcoatl when I was in Spanish for 5 semesters.
In high school?
Yeah. Which is when I originally found the birds, too, because they're so pretty. I like looking at birds. Like, pictures of birds? Cool. Living birds? Near me? Not good.
We are opposite. We are so opposite, because when I was a kid, there was this place called the San Diego Wild Animal Park, which is now, I think it has a different name to it, but it's the same. It's under the same branch as the San Diego Zoo, and it's still there. But they had this bird exhibit area where it was enclosed, but it was giant, covered in birds. And what you would do is you'd have these cups of nectar, and you'd hold the nectar out, and it's kind of like those butterfly exhibits where you do the same thing, but instead you were just covered by these tropical birds, and they'd all perch on your hands and on your head and on your shoulders. I remember there used to be pictures. There was like pictures of me just being covered with these birds, feeding them this nectar.
That sounds like an absolute nightmare.
I absolutely fucking loved it. But, I mean, you would have been screaming. I mean, some kids would scream because they found it freaky, but I thought it was super cool.
The Quetzals, you should definitely Google them. They are really, really pretty. And they're very tiny birds, but then their tails are a couple feet long.
They're huge.
Yeah. So, like, if you were drawing it, like, on a piece of paper, the body had to be all the way at the top, and the tail would go all the way down the page.
Okay, so that's Quetzalcoatl, and we will be back after this short break to talk about
Morana, a Slavic goddess. And we're back. So, Morana is the Slavic goddess of death, cold, frost, winter, and the cyclic nature of the seasons.
Oh, damn.
She is known by many names depending on the country. Marena in Russia, Morena in Slovakia, Morana in Czech and Serbia, Mara in the Ukraine, Mora in Bulgaria, and Majuna in Poland.
Mara!
We're gonna get there.
Elder Scrolls!
I'm sorry.
Actually, that is not where I thought you were going, so yes, also, that is not in any way related.
I know. I just thought it was cool.
Her names likely come from Mar and Mor, Proto-Indo-European roots relating to death. In this part, there's gonna be a lot of name dropping.
Aw, shit.
According to Wiki, some authors have likened her to the mare of Germanic and Slavic folklore, the entity we discussed in episode 46, since in the Belarusian, Ukrainian, and some Russian dialects, the word Mara means dream.
Oh.
And that's an interesting connection because the mare sometimes does cause death. However, the mare is not a deity, more a spirit, and so the parallels between the mare and Morana are few and mostly in name roots only. There may be a connection to the Roman god Mars, as one of his names is Marmor, and another version of her name is Marmoriana. And though Mars is a god of war, he also has agricultural origins, which would line up with her nature aspect in terms of plants dying in the winter and being reborn.
Hmm.
Some 13th and 14th century sources call her the Mother of Souls. Medieval Christian sources associate her with witchcraft.
Oh, shit.
All of this piled together means that not only is she associated with Mars, but also Hecate, the Thonic goddess of magic, ghosts, and crossroads, and Ceres, the goddess of agriculture and fertility. The oldest record of Morana dates back to 1202 in the Glossa Mater Verborum, where she is mentioned as Morana, Hecate, Triu, Iavel, Uakdiula, Proserpina, which roughly translates to Morana, Hecate the Threefold, Nightly Persephone.
Oh, shit.
And acts as a way to explain Morana to those unfamiliar with her by comparing her to the goddess of magic and the goddess of the underworld and agriculture.
She's got her hands in a lot of places.
Yeah.
Literally.
All over the place.
All over the place.
So I ran into some issues with parentage while I was researching. Some of it was saying she's the daughter of the god Perun from last episode and Mokosh, the great mother goddess. But other sources say she is the daughter of the goddess Lada and the god Svarog. Lada may be derived from Mokosh, and Perun and Svarog are both sky gods. However, Perun is the god of sky, rain, and thunder, while Svarog ruled over the realm of gods and spirits of the dead, fire, and smithing. So they're a little bit different.
Yes.
Her symbols are the scythe and sickle, grain and floral wreath, keys, red beads, geese, and snakes. Her colors are white, red, black, and green. She is described in varying ways, sometimes as a beautiful young woman with pale hair and skin dressed in white, other times as horrifying with long black hair and pale skin and the claws and fangs of a wolf.
Yeah.
Another version has her appear as a withered crone with an ugly face to most people, but to those that are unafraid of her, they see a beautiful woman.
Interesting.
Because she does embody death. So a lot of people are afraid of her.
Hmm.
Wading through folklore can be muddy. It's hard to find sources, and when you do find them, they're generally Christian manuscripts.
Truth.
The rest can be attributed to stories told about the goddess, but how old are these tales? Are they coming from families that actually live in these areas that have been passing down these tales for years? Or are these a new version that modern people that are interested in the mythology have written themselves? One website, ancientorigins.net, mentions that Morana lives in a palace made of mirrors where two rivers meet and is guarded by snakes. Other places say that she lives in the realm of the dead, Nav or Navia. Morana was worshipped with seasonal rites in many countries, to include, but I'm sure not limited to, the Czech Republic, Poland, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Serbia, parts of Russia, Belarus, and Ukraine. These days, some areas still hold festivals devoted to her, but they have become more cultural festivals and less religious.
Did it say what time of the year? You're about to get to that, aren't you?
During the spring equinox on March 21st...
Sorry.
There are festivals held in many towns where an effigy of Morana is destroyed, in varying means. The effigy can be made out of straw, twigs, or bits of fabric tied into the shape of a female doll. Either the effigy is doll-sized or as big as a human.
Oh, jeez.
Sometimes she is dressed in traditional dress, and another time she's dressed in rags. In many places, young girls would parade the effigy through the town, sometimes stopping to sing at homes for eggs or coins. Other places include older people and not just children. Along the way, the effigy would be dipped into every puddle they passed, and once they got to the river they were going to throw her in, multiple things could happen. Some towns rip the doll up before setting her on fire.
Oh my gosh.
And then throw her into the river. Some places just toss her into the river to ritualistically drown. The destruction would banish winter and hasten the coming of spring.
Oh.
However, the doll is eventually destroyed. The paraders would turn back to walk home, in some places carrying a copse of spruce or pine branches decorated with ribbons, flowers, and ornaments. The copse represents the spring and returning of the flesh of nature, and is brought back to the town while the paraders sing. But there is a dark side to this festival. There are a few superstitions involved with this. After the effigy ends up in the river, you should not touch it again because your hand will wither.
Oh my gosh.
After you turn away, you should not turn and look behind you, because if you do, you'll become ill.
It makes me think of the story of the lady turning into salt.
That's biblical, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. If you trip on your way home, someone in your family will die within the year.
Oh, that is upsetting.
So be careful not to do these things. As per usual, the church tried to ban these festivals multiple times.
Of course.
But they failed. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of historical documents on the Slavic pantheon and how the gods relate to each other. I was not able to find a range of time when Morana was worshipped. It predates 988 CE, when Vladimir the Great, quote, baptized Kiev into the Orthodox Christianity. This is around the time that Perun's statue was thrown into the river.
Yes.
So the worship of the old gods predates at least 988, but for how long prior to that, I am unsure. I came across a tale explaining winter. In this, Morana falls in love with the sun god, Dazbog, and they sleep together.
As you do.
As you do. However, after a time, he moves on to another lover, and Morana is furious. So she poisons him.
As you do.
This enrages him, so he burns her at the stake and sends her to Nav, the rude. World of the dead.
That is rude. Okay. Take in the consequences.
And also, next time, use more poison.
Like, so seriously.
He can't then burn you at the stake. Every winter, Morana reaches up and pulls Dazbog into the realm of the dead.
As you do.
It was believed that the sun went to Nav during the winter, and Dazbog only breaks free from her in time to return for spring.
Aw, damn.
Her counterpart is Vesna, the goddess of fertility in spring. Slavic folklore seems to favor dual deities. In the spring, Vesna takes over from Morana and helps the land flourish until fall. These days, she is found as the theme of some songs by Polish and Russian metal bands. Devil's Backbone Brewery,
hey!
In Virginia, once made a Czech-style dark lager named Morana, but they change their flavors regularly.
Oh, damn. I was gonna go look for it.
So it is not currently available.
Gosh darn it!
Now, the only reason I know this is because it was mentioned that that was something with her name on it. And where it was written, it said 14. It looked like the word degree, or like the symbol for degree. So 14 degree.
dark lager. And I was like, what does that mean? So I went to their actual website to see if it would explain what a 14, I'm assuming, degree lager is. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even there. You can't get it right now. So I don't know if it's going to be a seasonal thing where it comes out in the winter, because that would be like on par for Marana.
Right.
Or if it was like a one-shot deal and they've moved on to new ones and they do new ones every year. Is that the place that had the orange that you didn't like thing?
Maybe it was.
Because I was looking at the different types and I was like, that container looks a little familiar.
Let me see here. Yes, that is exactly the same one.
It's called Orange Smash. Was it too sweet?
I was expecting a creamsicle and it was just orange.
Okay.
That's what was disappointing about that.
That's fair. I'm not a huge fan of like orange bubbly things. Like I like orange juice, but Blue Moon, the orange version of Leinenkugel, I've never really been a fan of those. So anyway.
Sorry.
And of course they, in some places, they are still doing these festivals where they destroy the effigy to welcome the spring.
That's intense.
Mm-hmm. And that's Marana.
That was pretty cool. I like her. I don't like that she got
burned at the stake
after she poisoned the man that decided to leave her.
So that's why in some places the effigy is also burned and not just drowned.
Wasn't there a thing you were listening to this morning about how, like, you don't mess with Slavic women?
That was really funny. So I had already written that part down from multiple, like, written sources. They use that story over and over again. But I was trying to find the pronunciation of all of the different variations of her name. And there was this Slavic gentleman's YouTube where he was telling that story verbally so I could hear it and get the names. And after he said the part where she poisoned him, he was like, fellas, just a tip, don't mess with Slavic women.
Damn right. Don't fuck with them. That was interesting. I really like that one. I feel like there were a lot more stories for that goddess than there were for Perun. Mm-hmm. Perun, there was like generalizations that I found a lot of, but not nearly as many like stories themselves, which was very difficult because I did go looking quite a ways.
Right. And then there is the issue that the names are not the same across the countries, which makes sense because they each country has their own language. One place was saying, because she's associated with death and she has the scythe, that she's like the person that comes to get your soul, kind of like a Grim Reaper when you die.
Mm-hmm.
But I only saw that one place and I can't remember where. So I'm not sure how accurate that is, but that would kind of go hand in hand with she's terrifying if you're scared of death, but she's beautiful if you are not scared of her.
Hmm.
So I thought that was interesting.
Teresanjay classe.
Yeah. So we'll see how she turns out in the art. It'll be a surprise. We haven't done it yet. And we're also behind on last week. So we also have to do that.
We'll eventually put all the art up.
It will be up eventually.
It'll eventually be up. I also want to make sure that I mention that, like, after we put last week's episode up on Saturday, I got a message from WitchyWolf890 on Instagram saying, hey, I was the one that was like
looking for Anansi.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh my gosh, yes. So like I forgot that we actually had multiple people requesting for Anansi in various formats.
Which is crazy because like of all the spirits and all the gods in the entire world, we had multiple asking for the same one.
Yes. And I was like, that's cool. I was really excited about it. Thank you again for the recommendation. We enjoyed it. I know you definitely enjoyed researching.
Oh my gosh, so much.
Yes.
So, hi, Witchy Wolf. She's one of our longtime listeners.
Yes.
We very much appreciate it.
We do. We appreciate all the listening and the commentary. We do appreciate that.
And with that, Eliza, tell me something to brighten the mood.
I don't feel like I brought down the mood at all. However...
Well, I brought the mood down. I was talking about burning death, people and
poison,
betrayed and women.
Betrayal.
Then again, mine brought this on ourselves.
My god kept on putting himself into a funeral pyre or, like, setting himself on fire in some way, shape, or form after getting drunk. So, like, I get it, but...
Lots of fire in this episode.
Yeah. I've been, like, listening to that Bo Burnham song way too much. All Eyes on Me.
Yeah.
Something to brighten the mood. I started my new position. Like, I'm technically in the same company. I've just been put into a different position the past week. And that seems to be going all right. I'm a little wary of the one of this week coming because it's not as much help as I had last week with stuff. It's just a lot. But I'll be okay. It's going to be better pay, which is nice. I'm looking forward to that. And I'm no longer going to be with the temp agency that I've been with for the past, like, year almost. So that's good. I appreciate all the people that are listening in. It's just crazy to think about how, like, a year ago, literally on the 4th of July, we were recording saying we're sorry for the fireworks in the background and we've learned from our ways, and now we are, like, recording on 4th of July prior to the evening times. Except this time it's on a Sunday instead of a Saturday, because we've also learned that we can do things ahead of time in a certain way too, so it's just crazy. It's been a wild ride. I'm really happy about it. Oh, funny thing to talk about. The background investigation from going from the temp agency to this one.
Uh-huh. Oh my god.
That is a funny story, so I'm gonna tell it.
Go for it.
So first they call me and they're like, hey, call us back at this phone number to give us, you know, your validation that you work at this place. Because I list this as something I do for work, even though I don't get paid for it. And
it is work.
It is work, because we're working basically a second job in a way. And I just remember trying to call that number back, and the first thing it says is, you've reached the hot girls hotline. If you want to talk to hot men, press 1. And I was like, oh no. Hung that up real fast, and I was like, he's gonna call me back later. Whoever this investigator is gonna call me back later. So he calls me back the next day, and he's like, is this? Insert name. And I was like, yeah, that person works at Coffee Table Mythos. And then they're like, okay, what's your name? And then I list my name, and they were like, you're the candidate. And I'm like, yeah, I also am one of the co-founders and owners of this. And he's like, oh... I'm like, okay, so he hangs up.
He wanted to talk to your manager.
He wanted to talk to my manager, and I was like, there is no manager. It's like that power you feel whenever someone's like, I want to talk to your manager. You're talking to the manager right now.
Oh.
Yeah. It's like, I personally know the owner. I am the owner. Oh.
I've never met you before in my life.
Yeah, exactly. So it was like one of those. But they ended up sending me an email saying, hey, we want proof of your 1099. And I was like, there is no 1099 because I didn't make any money.
Right. We aren't getting paid for this.
No.
So I was like, tell them to go listen to the 50-some episodes we've posted. That's the evidence.
I just eventually got to the point where I was like, just take it off of it. Just take it off, because obviously you guys don't understand. Because I was always taught you put your volunteer work on top of, you know, because if it's a job, it's a job. There's that.
Yeah, that was a really funny conversation. Yeah. And then after the fact, she was like, oh, I should have given him your number and you could have been, like, pretending to be the manager. And I was like, you don't want to give me that kind of power, because no. I will fuck with some people.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, so tell me something to brighten the mood.
The weather here has been, like, really gross, and I am a delicate flower who cannot be out in the heat. And we finally had a break in temperature yesterday, so Saturday, and it was, like, under 80 degrees, and there was a breeze, and it was really nice out, so we decided to go for a walk along the river. It wasn't too long of a walk because the trail we were on was, like, unmaintained. So we went one direction for a little bit, turned around, went the other direction. Then we had Dova with us, and she was trying to make friends with a snake. And Eliza was like, yeah, we're not doing that.
It was coiling. It was getting ready to jump. I was like, nope, we're not doing this today.
Maybe a snake deity wants us to do a like research on it. Because right around when I was doing Anansi, I was seeing a lot of spiders.
I've been seeing so many snakes yesterday.
And then on the way home, so we saw the one on the path. And then on the way home, one was trying to cross the road, and I had to avoid it so I didn't run it over.
Yeah. You were like, what's with all the snakes? And I was like, I guess I'd really need to do Quetzalcoatl today.
So we got to, you know, walk around, stretch our legs, get Dova out. Dova usually gets a walk just at, like, the close-by park most days.
But I take her every day almost.
I got to go for a walk.
Yeah.
I was taken for a walk.
Yeah. I took Leah for a walk. And it was actually Leah friendly outside.
Yeah, and it was. I was actually a little sad that the paths were so rough where we ended up going, because it was so nice. I could have walked for a lot longer, but that's okay. We got to go for a bit of a drive and also the nice little walk. So we went a couple towns over and got pizza from a place that we really like, but they don't, like, it's kind of far away to go. And yeah. They definitely don't deliver to where we live. So we got to have that pizza. I'm actually kind of surprised that wasn't your good thing.
I forgot. There's been a bit of pizza in the past 24 hours.
The pizza that Eliza gets called a bee sting because she loves honey. So it's like pizza sauce, cheese, pepperoni, and honey, right? But spicy pepperoni.
Yeah. And then there's like a spicy honey they put on it. And then on top of that, I always add pineapples because I'm a heathen. And I like pineapples with my pepperoni pizza, so.
Oh my gosh, so this is not, okay, so we're done with the brighten the mood section, but I gotta tell you guys something.
This happened last night, right?
This happened last night. A couple weeks ago, we were at the grocery store, and I really wanted a watermelon, so we got it. But then, like, I was not in the mood to eat it for, like, a couple weeks. So last night, I was finally like, we're eating this watermelon tonight.
It's been actually a week.
You know I have a problem with time.
I know.
I'm not correcting it.
I know.
So, I got a watermelon a week ago. And we had it last night. And Eliza was saying, after she proceeds to eat, like, a lot of watermelon.
It was like a third of a watermelon.
Yeah.
It's a giant watermelon, so.
She was like, my mouth is itchy. And I was like, are you allergic to watermelon? She was like, no. And then, like, a little while later, she's like, maybe. Guacamole does this too, so I might be allergic to avocado. And I'm like, what the fuck? So I went and got her an allergy pill.
Then I passed out shortly thereafter.
Yeah, so like, it reminded me of that thing on the internet where this person was posted, I think it was a Tumblr post back in the day. Person was like, oh, I love potatoes so much, it's worth getting the potato sweats for. And their friend was like, dude, that's not normal. You're allergic to potatoes. And they were like, I just thought everybody thought potatoes were so delicious they were willing to deal with the potato sweats. And now I just have to watch her because, like, apparently she's been eating things that make her mouth itch.
It's only those two things. And it was recent. Like, I was talking to my sister this morning and she was saying she has the same thing happen with raw cucumbers. If they're cooked cucumbers, it's okay.
Why would you ever cook a cucumber?
Or if it's like a...
like a pickle?
A pickle, she's fine. But if it's like a raw cucumber, she gets an allergic reaction to it.
Good lord.
Yeah.
Okay, people, don't eat things that make your mouth itchy.
Well, pineapple already makes my mouth itchy, but that's because, like,
of the enzymes. Yeah.
And that's after I eat a lot of it.
That's normal. Watermelon and avocados do not have the bromeliad enzymes that do that, though.
It tastes great.
I know.
Jamie.
Get out of here with that. All right, everyone.
All right. Thank you all for listening in. This is Coffee Table Mythos. We'll catch you next time.